This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 7:13 in the evening with Lynn and Kelvin. And like we said, we've been talking about Malaysia and our international rankings, or at least our international rankings according to random websites and indexes, apparently. And next up, we have some good news. We got a higher rating in a pension index. Now, I should give you context for that, because our rating went from a C to a C+. And that is in the 2019 Melbourne Mercer Global Pension Index, or in short, the MMGPI. So our index value increased from 58.5 in 2018 to 60.6 in 2019. And this is due to updated data on the net replacement rate.
But as always, there are always improvements to be made. The report said that our overall index value for our funds can be, our EPF rather, can be increased by getting better at the minimum level of support for the poorest aged individuals, raising the level of household savings and lowering the level of household debt, introducing a requirement that that part of the retirement benefit must be taken as an income stream, and also increasing the pension age as life expectancy continues to increase.
So, you know, it's a pretty complicated subject, this idea of a pension, because, of course, it's difficult to... I think whenever we think about retirement, sometimes it can seem very daunting. And part of... And the pension is supposed to be part of our social safety net, yeah, right? It's supposed to be there in order for us to be able to retire, or in order for us to be able to retire comfortably after a lifetime of working and contributing to this pension. And so seeing the C to a C plus thing, I mean, like, okay... The rating itself aside, I'm curious as to how we judge what is a good pension,
right,
you know? And I think that's really kind of what I want to get at today, because I don't think personally I have the best understanding of what that might be.
Yeah, I would be on the same page as you, right? And, you know, there's also the additional stuff that you have to think about, because they're telling you, they meaning the likes of governments, those who work in financial planning, that your EPF simply isn't enough and you have to think about investing in other sources and also in private retirement schemes that could really bolster you the moment you hit that retirement age.
And in line with that, I'm also curious to know from you guys, do you have other retirement schemes, or do you have plans for your retirement that exist outside of the pension? So that exists outside of, if you're a civil servant, then, you know, the pension mm-hmm. scheme. If you're not, then, you know, the EPF. Like, do you actually look into that on your own, or are you in many ways relying on that level of what you've already put in, or that level of what's already been provided? I'd be curious to know, basically. Tell us what you want. I know we just spoke about privacy, so so of course, up to you. But yeah, are you kind of fully in the government pension scheme, or do you have other plans? Call us and let us know, 7733-2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
We're now crossing over to Dr. Norma Manso, Emeritus Professor at the Social Wellbeing Research Centre at University Malaya. Prof, thanks so much for joining us this evening. What do you see as some of the strengths and weaknesses of our retirement scheme in Malaysia?
Well, first of all, just like any other country, Malaysia has the public service pension, yeah. But we also have the EPF, the Employees Provident Fund, the contribution of employers and employees. That is something that we have that some countries do not have. Yeah, and the other one is the LTAT. Yeah, you have COAP, the Public Service Trust Fund, and you also have a pension fund. You also have the military fund, the LTAT, and you have the EPF for private sector formal employees. Yeah, so these are the three savings schemes that we have in Malaysia that has been around since the British. Yeah, so that's the strength of our savings for retirement. However, the especially for the EPF, people need not necessarily keep the money in the EPF scheme, because it is not translated into superannuation. It's not translated into monthly pension for contributors. Yeah, so that's where I think we need to review and work on that. Yeah, but as a saving fund for retirement, we have a sound governance structure of the EPF, and also the investment, the kind of investment that EPF has performed. in the past has given good returns. So for that kind of fund, EPF is a good fund. But you have to remember that still a certain percentage of the population, about 20% or so, that is in the formal sector that do not have any kind of formal savings or compulsory or institutional savings for them to retire.
So, Prof, you mentioned that the EPF doesn't translate to monthly funds. I mean, could you explain to us, you know, the alternative and why we're not doing that as of now?
The EPF, when it was designed, it was for expatriates. Yeah, for expatriates, when they retire, they leave the colony, they will bring back their retirement savings. Yeah, but we have not changed that. Although generally they're all citizens who are contributing to the EPF, but we did not see that as a type of pension where you get monthly income. Post-retirement. You can do that, yeah, but it doesn't cross-subsidize, meaning that you whatever that you withdraw from your savings, you can, for instance, EPF has allowed you to keep the fund or your savings within your account, but it's only your account and the returns that you get from the investment from yours and your employer. So there is no, when you call insurance, yeah, it falls under what you call in social protection, social insurance. But the insurance aspect of it is not there. That means you don't cross-subsidize. The wealthy, the more affluent contributors do not subsidize the less affluent contributors. Yeah, so there's that element there. And whatever you withdraw is from your own savings plus the returns from your investment, from the investment made by the EPF.
Prof, you also mentioned that a certain percentage of workers in the formal sector aren't covered under a retirement scheme. Why hasn't it been extended to these workers?
The government did introduce the voluntary, yeah. EPF has a voluntary contribution that you can contribute, housewives can contribute, self-employed can contribute. But it is their contribution and government contribute a certain, a very small amount. And there is also the PRS, the private retirement scheme, where a few banks are offering that product. But then again, it doesn't have that element of providing the pension income security when you post-retirement.
So we've been talking about how we've gone from a C to a C+, and you know how we might keep improving. What do you think we should be aiming for when it comes to improving our retirement scheme?
I think it's time for us to have this conversation that there should be what the World Bank called the full pillar of the saving scheme. Yeah. So, for instance, if you have a social pension, it is considered a pillar one or pillar zero, right? But we don't have that. And then what we have, the full pillar will also be like the public service pension or the LTAT, where you provide post-retirement, someone is getting the superannuation. Yeah, but the EPF is considered a half pillar because it doesn't provide that continued income post-retirement if your savings is completed or finished. Yeah, so converting part of it as a full pillar, not all, yeah, a certain percentage that is enough, as I mentioned, to provide for the basic minimum standard. Yeah, in fact, I think the government should look at combining both public and private. Private would include the EPF contribution to be part of the new social pension or the pension system for Malaysia, so that everyone receives a pension, whether you are middle income earner or you are the poor, yeah, public sector, private sector, but someone, a Malaysian, should have a minimum income when they retire and they don't fall back into poverty.
And, you know, could you explain to us a little bit more about social pensions?
Okay. Social pension in many countries is from the tax revenue, yeah. Many countries have this. The country within Southeast Asia would be Thailand. you know, someone reaches the age of 60 will receive 500 baht. So that is taken from tax revenue. So you can give a low social pension to everyone. And so this is what we call a categorical type of social protection. Yeah, that any Malaysian that reached the age of 70 or 60, yeah, or maybe you don't want to start at 60, maybe start at 70, then you receive a certain amount from the government, from tax revenue. Or for those who has an okay, so that's one level. And if you are an EPF contributor, then you should a portion of your contribution should be towards paying for your pension. So here again, you know, you combine the one that's coming from tax revenue and from your own employment related pension. So that will ensure that every older person, when you reach certain age, you will get some kind of, or you will have some kind of income security. So in Thailand, when you reach the age of 60, aside from the civil servants, yeah, if you already received the civil service pension, you're not receiving it anymore. But other than that, whether you are rich or poor, you'll be getting 500 baht a month. You know, and how much is 500 baht? But still, there is some kind of an insured income that you will get post-retirement.
So just off the top of my head, I can imagine that the counter-argument to this would be that wealthy retirees don't need that social pension. What would be your response to that?
Okay. Now, what I'm talking about will be moving away from targeting income targeting, because income targeting is very costly. The administration of income targeting, when you have to verify and all that, is very expensive. And evidence out there shows that 11.5% goes to the administrative costs. Yeah. So if you say that you want to give pension to a Malaysian at the age of 70, we have the identity card, right? The My Card. So My Card, nobody can, of course you can, you know, there are scams out there. But otherwise, My Card can be your proof that you have your My Card, and money can be transferred to you through My Card or through some other small kedai runcit or, you know, small grocery shop that would have you know, the reader for My Card that could pay you. Yeah. So we've done this before, you know, our little post office or post office representatives or whatever. Because when we are talking about social protection, it should be able to reach the weakest, the most illiterate, and the furthest. Yeah. So we have to find a way to make it simple, to make it cheap, so that all our costs, you know, the cost is not about the administration, but the cost goes to actually benefiting the people. Now, for the rich, if we feel that the rich doesn't want to pay, but the rich will say this, everything is for others. What about me? I pay the tax as well. So we have done our calculation that even if you pay the rich, essentially the rich pay into the system more. Yeah, you pay the rich, but you tax them back. So you are not actually supporting the rich. We've done our calculation, the support or the biggest beneficiary will still be the poor. But if you want to exclude the rich, you can do it. Other countries did it. It's called asset testing, where they have to prove, because now we can link with the Inland Revenue that to find out whether you are in the top, you know, the recent budget that you pay for those who earn 2 million a year, you pay the 30% income tax. Yeah. So for those, if they want their old age pension, then they should prove that they don't earn that much. So the proving is not from the poor. The need to prove that they deserve it is from the rich. You can go for that as well if you want.
Right. And you mentioned this idea for an alternative system. As a nation, are we aspiring towards that?
Well, the more we talk about this, yeah, and we believe in advocating, yeah, because we are a research center that's established it's from an endowed EPF endowed fund. So we believe in advocacy, going for the what's good for the country. Yeah, hopefully the government will listen to this new conversation or the progress that's, you know, the progressive thinking of social protection, which is a moving away from this narrow welfare type or stigmatizing. Yeah, some people, they do not want to apply for the benefits for the poor because they don't want to see as being poor. Yeah, there's a stigma. Some people malu also, you know, if they are the recipient of zakat or the poverty kind of benefits. So instead of that, we are progressing into covering people that we feel they are vulnerable. So this is what we are talking, and we hope more people will be talking about this. This morning, there was a conference organized by ISIS Praxis that we talk about social security, social protection, especially our country is already aging, slowly aging. Yeah, and our retirement age is 60. So when psychologically people think that the retirement age is 60, somehow they stop. They want to stop at 60. Yeah, and yet, they have like 20, 30 good years. And if they are healthy, 20, 30 good years that they can contribute to the productive economy or in any way. So it doesn't really matter because in the end, is the economy, the society that will benefit, even if they are involved in religious teachings or what have you, or NGOs, yeah, they are still contributing to the society.
Prof, thank you so much for speaking with us this evening. That was Datuk Dr. Norma Mansor, Emeritus Professor at the Social Wellbeing Research Centre of University Malaya, talking about our pensions. You've been listening to The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.